Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. In this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL Week 4 and Week 5. We'll talk about our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We will talk about the WNBA playoffs, and we will have our Jack's Hot Take. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow and turn on the post notifications for Just In Time Sports social media at JTime Sports on all of your favorite social medias. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good.
Look, this is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. He gon' tell it to you straight,
Welcome into the show. Oh, we are loving, I mean, me personally, I am loving the instant release shows. This would be another one. This would be an instant release show. News is coming in all over the place. So this would be definitely an instant release show. I'm excited for that. I cannot wait for you guys to hear this guy say. It's fresh off the presses, hot off the presses. Like I said, I love instant release shows. This is your host, of course, Justin Jackson. You should see the YouTube show. For those of you who are YouTube show fans, you should see the YouTube show this weekend sometime. So you'll get that definitely before the slate of games this Sunday. But of course, we will take care of you on the audio show, DJTS original audio show produced by IMS Productions. This week we'll cover the NFL's week 4 and 5. Like I said, news is coming out all over the place. The last 24 hours has been kind of juicy in the news cycle. And we're going to have an NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack, that we barely missed out on having an amazing week. We still had a good week, but we barely missed out on having an amazing week. We will have the WNBA as they're in their playoffs. They're in the thick of their playoffs. They're in their Final Four. And then we will have Jack's Hot Take, which, of course, this week. And we started it last week. Going to continue that going, which would be the college football two-minute drill. But let's jump right into the NFL Week 4. Talk about what's happening last week. The Minnesota Vikings are real. I said it in Week 2. I said it in Week 3. Saying it again in Week 4, the Minnesota Vikings are real. Sam Darnold is real. This looks to be a positive situation. Look, we know what the defense is going to represent with Brian Flores. Every stop Brian Flores has been in the NFL, his defense has been spectacular. Whether it's been a head coach or a defensive coordinator, he has had a high-level defense. You give him guys who are smart, who are physical, and he is going to put together an amazing defense. I mean, there's one play that I know they showed on Speak for Yourself, I think, on FS1, where Acho shows the pre-snap look. He shows it to LeSean McCoy, and he shows it to James Jones. We're talking about LeSean McCoy, who in his peak of Philadelphia led the NFL in rushing, who shaded McCoy, one of the most dangerous backs over a 10-year span in the league. James Jones was a very long-time NFL receiver, very high-level wide receiver 2, incredibly high-level wide receiver 3 player. They both said cover 0 man. They said at best it turns into 2 high man, but they was like, they both said man coverage. It morphed into a cover 2 with your safeties at the bottom. Like, it was the most insane thing, and they both were going, holy crap. Like, that's what they were throwing at C.J. Stroud, and it's like, C.J. Stroud comes in line, and he goes, Okay, cool. I see the safeties at the bottom. I see there's no safeties in the middle. It's gotta be cover zero. Worst come to worst, it morphs to a one-high man, but it's man concepts. And I'm looking at my man beating routes on this play, and it turns into cover two with the safety at the bottom. And it's like, I beg your pardon? Like, I mean, so, you know, that is the level of gamesmanship Brian Flores is playing with the Minnesota Vikings, and the offense looks great. Sam Darnold looks great. This is the best touch of football he's played in his NFL career easily. This is the kind of football that you saw, that I saw, and that others saw from him, and being able to play when he left USC. The reason why he was drafted so high by the New York Jets. Now, it's the Jets. The Jets tend to mess that quarterback thing up, as they so often do. The Jets and the Panthers tend to screw up quarterbacks. Again, as they so often tend to do. However, the Minnesota Vikings has, with Kevin O'Connell as their play caller, they have really shown what Sam Darnold's capable of. This is the Darnold's fourth team. Now, if you guys remember correctly, people in San Francisco spoke very highly of Sam Darnold. And I do mean very highly of Sam Darnold. They spoke of him saying that, you know, pretty much one of the reasons why Trey Lance was ultimately moved was because you had Sam Darnold in the building. He looked a lot like Brock Purdy. He was smart. He threw a great deep ball. He was accurate. You know what I'm saying? And it was one of those things where, that's why he was picked, I think, second or third in the NFL draft. This is the player. It's not the player that we saw in New York. It's not the player that we saw. I can't think of his second stop right now. But it's not the player that we saw even in Carolina. I mean, you saw it in spurts in Carolina, but it's not the player we saw in Carolina. It's the player that we saw in spurts in San Francisco, and it's the player we're seeing now in Minnesota. You know, Sam Darnold right now is 69% completion percentage, 8.8 yards a completion. He's thrown over 233 yards a game, modest numbers, 11 touchdowns, 3 picks, and he has a passer rating of 118.9. Now, 233 yards is nothing. Oh, he has a QBR. His QBR is third in the league at 73.5, with 50 being average. Look, 233 yards a game, it's not lighting the league up. But also, you've got to understand, passing yards is down. Passing yards is way down in the league this year. Passing touchdowns is way down in the league this year. Mostly, I would attribute it to too high safety looks. Because if you look at him right now, he's ninth in the league in passing yards. He's first in the league in passing touchdowns. And he's only throwing 3 picks, and he's third in the league in QBR. So he's having one of the best 5 seasons in the league. If you look at the just look at the numbers. They're also undefeated. Like I said, he's keeping that defense out of trouble. Now, he had a bad pick against the Packers that he can't have. And that was one of those, is this the Sam Darnold of old returning? But he's looked great. Minnesota's rolling. Like I said, they didn't bring back Dalvin. They didn't even look at Dalvin Cook again. You know, they're rolling with who they got at running back. The defense is playing spectacular, and Sam Darnold's being efficient, and he's being effective. And if that's going to be the case, that's going to make J.J. McCarthy's life hard. And this is projecting, 10 months into the future in terms of right now the Vikings are 4-0. I think the Vikings are going to win that division. I just don't. The Bears are no threat right now. Who's that team in that division? Oh, the Lions. Okay, so the Vikings and the Lions to me are going to fight over that division. I think the Packers are going to finish in third, but I think that division is going to put 3 teams in. There's going to be 1 team out of the NFC East. Right now, it's looking like the Commanders. I think it's going to be 1 team out of the NFC East. I think the NFC West is going to put 1 team in as well, and it's looking like the Niners or the Seahawks. So I think Niners and Seahawks is 2 spots. The South is going to put in 1. I think it's going to be the Saints. The East is going to put in 1. Right now, looking like the Commanders. So those are 4 spots, and I think that the North puts in 3. I think the Packers, the Vikings, and the Lions make it, and I think whoever ends up third team is battling the second place NFC East team for that spot. Whether that is, like I said, either Washington or Dallas, I think gets in based on the division winner. I think the other one is fighting the third NFC North team to get into the playoffs. But I think the Vikings get in, and they're going to be hell to beat once they get in because of that defense and because of how efficient Sam Darnold's playing. But let's just hypothesize. Let's just jump way out into the ether. Let's make a few assumptions here. Let's just say Darnold keeps up 80% of his play. So maybe not third in QBR, maybe he falls to seventh. Maybe not first in touchdowns, he falls to fourth or fifth. Maybe not, you know, third in yards, he goes to seventh or eighth. But he's a consensus, based on the numbers this year, top eight quarterback. What do you do with J.J. McCarthy? And, you know, and there, and the Vikings are 12-5. You know, let's go 12-5. They win the playoff game. They lose the second playoff game. It's the NFC. Let's say they either lose the second playoff game close or they get blown out of a conference championship game. What do you do with J.J.? But if they lose that playoff game, it's not because of Darnold. He's, you know, 22 of 30 for 255. Three touchdowns, one tip pick, QBR of like 74. But you can clearly say it's not Darnold. The defense had a bad night in the office or something. What do you do at quarterback? Do you say open competition? You drafted McCarthy ninth overall. Darnold's cheap as hell. So do you just say open competition? Whoever gets it, gets it. But then if that's the case, let's say you do that, and you say McCarthy wins the job, and he comes out and loses his first two games. Do you put Darnold back in there? Do you trade Darnold in the offseason to not have issues? I mean, McCarthy's the point where do you call a team and say, hey, McCarthy's really cheap. We'll pay half the guarantees. We'll ship him over to y'all in exchange for a third-round pick. We're just recouping some of the assets. Like, what do you do if you are the Vikings? Because Darnold right now is making J.J. McCarthy's pick look irrelevant. Now, what you could have gotten in number nine, you could have gotten several good players at number nine. If you were the Minnesota Vikings last year, because let's say you skipped. Let's say you decided to skip J.J. McCarthy at number nine. And again, this is one of those situations where this is playing with hindsight and it's doing, it doesn't matter. You were going to go quarterback either way because you let Kirk Cousins go, right? So you were going to go quarterback. That was no, I'm sorry, 10th J.J. McCarthy because Adunze went ninth. There's a left tackle from Penn State who you swap picks with. Brock Bowers is there. You didn't have an elite tight end. Brock Bowers is right there. You don't have a guy at tight end. There's multiple. And defensive guys are irrelevant. But like Mims isn't playing for Cincinnati. Fuaga is playing really well for New Orleans. So that could have helped you on the offensive line. But like I said, probably Brock Bowers would have been the pick if... you didn't pick J.J. McCarthy there. You picked Brock Bowers, and this offense probably looks even more explosive because Brock Bowers is playing like a top three tight end in the league right now. And so that would have been a situation there. But I mean, so that's something that you look at, like I say, if you're the Vikings, because of the way Darnold's playing very, very well. But shout out to the Vikings. I'm going to keep my eye on you guys, definitely, for sure. I was a Darnold guy when he came out of school. It may have taken four teams and, you know, to get it right. But hey, if he got it right, he got it right. So let's see how this goes. But speaking of another high draft pick that I love coming out of school, Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders. And we spoke about them in our last thing about how they're playing really, really good football right now. They're 3-1. They're playing really good football. And Daniels right now has led more scoring drives than he has in completions. The Commanders have scored on 23 drives this season. Jaden Daniels has 19 incompletions this season. Through the first four games of the year, he has an 82.1% completion percentage. That's the highest by several percentage points in NFL history through the first four games of any season, not just the rookie season, of any season. We're talking he beats 07 Brady's efficiency mark coming out of the gate in his first four games of his career. The Washington Commanders offense scored 42 points last week. It's the first time they scored 40 points in multiple seasons. I mean, this was the dream that many people in Chicago had for Caleb Williams. Maybe not the efficiency, because Daniel's thing was efficiency. Caleb Williams' thing was playmaking. But in his thing of just making plays and scrambling around and being awesome, this is what many people in Chicago wanted to see out of Caleb Williams. I thought you would see out of Jaden Daniels pretty early, and that's what you're seeing. And I spoke about it in the pre-draft process, and my co-host on the YouTube show, co-host on the YouTube show, Jai, was speaking about it, and his whole thing was Daniels has one of the highest floors, but he has but his ceiling isn't all that through the roof. You know, we both said Caleb Williams had the highest ceiling and the lowest floor. Either he could be the best quarterback in the league and challenge Mahomes, or he could be out of the league in 3 years, kind of thing. And we took Daniels with a higher floor, Bo Nix having the highest of floor, or Bo Nix having a lowest ceiling, lowest floor, probably one of the lower floors. But Daniels wasn't going to be bad. Now, whether he was great was a whole different conversation, but he was never going to be bad. If he ended up as the 15th best quarterback in the league, one of those guys you think of, man, if we have an off year and can get a top quarterback in the draft, great, we'll replace him, but we're never going to draft a guy at the middle of the round. We're never going to get a guy out of free agency because he's better than those guys. But right now, Daniels looks like the best quarterback in the division. Now, Daniel Jones is given as the worst. But Hurts is making $250 million. Dak is making $260 million, $240 million, something like that. Jaden Daniels looks like the best quarterback in the division. He's easily the most efficient, right? He's easily the most efficient quarterback in the division. He is the most athletic quarterback in the division. He throws the best deep ball in that division. And let's be honest, he has to do what he's doing because he doesn't have that great of a defense. The Washington Commanders defense is awful. Now, they played well against the Arizona Cardinals, so I don't know what happened with the Cardinals there, but the Commanders defense historically has been awful. But they have Dan Quinn as the head coach. So, and I kind of like how they're set up. Now, I spoke about Kingsbury. I've talked about it previously, how he always tends to fail up, where, you know, he gets effectively fired at Texas Tech, or he gets fired at Texas Tech, lands as a USC OC, and then before gets effectively firing there, he lands the Arizona head coaching job. Then he gets fired from Arizona, has tons of immediate offensive coordinator offerings in the league, then goes to like Thailand or something, goes no contact, and then comes back and he lands as the Washington Commanders OC under Dan Quinn, which effectively means he's the head coach of the offense because Dan Quinn is going to head coach the defense. So you've got Dan Quinn head coaching the defense. That unit's looking better. You've got Cliff Kingsbury head coaching the offense. That unit's looking better. You have a lot of the frustrations you saw early from a Terry McLaurin. You're not seeing that right now. He's smiling. They're smiling. Everybody's laughing and having a great time. Daniels is cheesing from ear to ear. Now, I will caution Commanders fans on this. And even me as a Jaden Daniels supporter, I'm going to caution myself on this. Cliff Kingsbury has a history of this. He has a history of the first month to 2 months of a season. First month to a month and a half of a season. His offense is blazing. They're tearing people apart left and right. They can't be guarded. If you play a game with them and you're holding the 26 points, you're like, oh man, we had a great game defensively. Like, and then that second half of the year, it starts to get a little cold, and he doesn't adjust well to people adjusting to him, and so the offensive numbers drop off. You saw that every year at Arizona. They would blaze out of the gate, and then they fall off the map. And then you saw it like with Texas Tech. They would hit people for 50 and 60 and 70 points. And then when those conference opponents get a look at them, they fall off a map. You saw it at USC. It fell off a map. So it's not abnormal for a Cliff Kingsbury team to run out of the gate offensively. It is also not abnormal for them to fall off a map. So that is what they're going to have to caution against, is just, like I said, going off the deep end once defenses begin to adjust a little bit to them. The Kansas City Chiefs continue to find ways to survive. I don't know how long it's going to last. You've got Rashee Rice out with, we'll talk about him, but he's out with a knee injury. You've got Hollywood Brown out for the year with a knee, or out for the regular season with a shoulder. Travis Kelce, before last game, looked like he was on the wrong side of the retirement home. You have a spectacularly good defense. That defense was good and young last year. Now they've all developed a year older. They're just as good. They might even be a little better. You have a running back room with no Isaiah Pacheco, no Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It's a bunch of fill-in guys. Your tight end room behind Travis Kelce, your pass catcher room in general, is not one that instills a ton of fear and anxiety into defensive coordinators, because the best one in the room at this point might be Juju Smith-Schuster after Travis Kelce. Like, they're not instilling a bunch of fear into you from a skill position room, like I said, besides Travis Kelce. And before that game, against the Chargers. He looked like he was on the wrong side of the retirement home. But despite all that, they're 4-0. And they're still favored in the Super Bowl. And this is significant because they haven't played their A game or even their B game. Some may argue not even their C game all season. And they're 4-0, including a division win on the road at the Chargers. Who, yes, Herbert was on one ankle, but Jim Harbaugh has that looking like a different Chargers team. And they went in there and beat them. So, you know, despite all that, they're still one of the the Vegas favorites to win the Super Bowl and to complete their three-peat. They are still a force that nobody wants to see coming into their building. They are still one of the top teams in the NFL. And like I said, they haven't even played what most would consider a C game by them. They continue to survive. Now, at a certain point, and this is why three-peats are hard, and we'll speak about that with the Aces in the WNBA segment. But at a certain point, extended seasons catch up with you. That's what made LeBron's run through the East so marvelous. He went to the finals 9 straight times. So every year, for 9 straight years, his season didn't end until you were in June. If he decided to play in international play, his season, he would say, he would just basically take a week off and then start to shoot the international ball, play through the summer, and then take a week off, and then 45 days later, he's back on the NBA court for game one. And he did this for 9 consecutive years, or 10 consecutive years, something like that. And it's just like, at a certain point, the lack of an offseason, the lack of real rest, the lack of whatever, the increase in mileage and intensity and so on and so forth, eventually that catches up with you, right? And that's what's going on with the Chiefs. So you have these seasons where you're playing into February every single year. Well, like minicamp was starting like March or April. So how much are you really working before that first like spring camp? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like right after the draft, there's like the intro camp. So like how much are you working 2.5 months later off a Super Bowl ring? Like how hard are you really going and how often are you doing it? When did you start doing it? So these are all, you know, these are all things that factor into the fact that it's hard to repeat to win championships. Also, you lose players, you lose staff members, you lose your position of one of to the best team in the league, and everybody's looking at you and how to beat you, and everybody's figuring out, kind of putting their heads together, like, man, how do we dethrone the Chiefs? Because they're the, like I said, back-to-back Super Bowl champion. How do we remove them out of their comfort zone and into a space where they are vulnerable? You know, so that is something that people are still trying to figure out. And as of now, they have not cracked it. The Baltimore Ravens absolutely roll this past week over the Buffalo Bills. Shout out the Ravens. That was one of those wins that it's like, all right, I've not been a big proponent of Derrick Henry signing, and to be honest, I'm still not. However, that was a game where it's like, okay, I get it, right? Like, first play, he slips through a hole 87 yards later, longest rush in Baltimore history. He's hitting his head off the goalpost. And it's like, okay, that is where, like, the average player can't do that, right? Like, but that was a game where Derrick Henry was important. But, and I still stand by the fact that it wasn't that fruitful, but that game against the Bills was a game that if you wanted to point to Derrick Henry being a great signing, you point to that game. And so it was absolutely rolling on the ground. So Henry ends up finishing with 199 on 20-some-odd carries. He was physical. He was dominant. He was stiff-arming. He was running over. He was running by the Buffalo Bills defense. At one point, a guy tried to, you know, correctly tackle him in the leg and hurt himself. Like, Derrick Henry is a freak of nature. He's an absolute monster. They are figuring out what schemes he like and how often get him the ball. So that can make defenses even more in pain trying to deal with him. But congratulations to the Ravens. Like I said, it was 0-2. Panic was ensuing. People were considering, you know, how would Bill Belichick look coaching this team? And now they have improved to 2-2. And look, we'll talk about their next week game, actually. In our next segment, And then lastly, shout out to the Detroit Lions for having an offensive explosion. Shout out to the Detroit Lions for having an offense. Shout out to the Detroit Lions for not being the bums anymore. Shout out to the Detroit Lions for honestly just not stinking. But kudos to them. They ran the ball at will for a majority of this game. They were physical. They were dominant. I mean, it was, you know, it was parts of the game, especially early, where they were like, man, we're just going to run the ball. We're going to run the ball all the way down the field, and we're going to punch it in on the ground, and then we're going to dare you to come up. And once you come up, you're in a bad, bad spot for people who can throw the football, which the Detroit Lions can. But up next, we're going to shift into NFL Week 5. Welcome back into the show. That was a long A block. Is it just me? Was it just me? Was that a really long A block? I wasn't anticipating that long of an A block. That'd probably be our longest block of the show. But we're going to get into NFL Week 5 in the B block. We're going to start off with the biggest news that has broken over the past 24 to 48 hours. Davante Adams has had enough. He wants out of Vegas. All right, so let's talk about it here. Davante Adams has had a tumultuous 5 years in the NFL. Recently, look, I mean, how long has Aaron Rodgers been gone from the Packers? 3 years. This is his year two with the Jets. He played a year without Davante. So the past 3 years has been incredibly interesting in Davante Adams' career. Four off seasons, really. He goes into the Packers. He's with the Packers. He goes, hey, I'm worth this. The Packers goes, no, not really. So there's a big contract dispute with the Green Bay. Ultimately, according to Davante, he said he was willing to play it out and renegotiate the next year or go to free agency, whatever. He wasn't trying to put on a franchise tag. He ends up, basically, the Packers say, okay, if you can go get that contract, we'll help you get to the team. You know how certain teams do it. We don't believe that money's out there. If you can go find it, we'll help you. He goes and finds it in Vegas. Vegas, conveniently, also has Derek Carr. Derek Carr was Davante Adams' college quarterback at Fresno State. Excuse me. So this is looking like a match for Davante Adams in his head. He's like, okay, it's perfect. I go get my money. I go to Vegas. He spoke about it with Shannon Sharp. You know, his daughter is now not looking at her playset in like November because it's too cold to go outside, or like late October. You know what I'm saying? Like October, November, it's too cold to go outside in Green Bay for a little, you know, for a little child. So she's looking at her playset going like, dang, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can't even do nothing. He says it's the saddest. He says one of the saddest photos in his life. You know, that's not a thing anymore in Vegas. You know, it gets cold in Vegas, sure, but it's not Green Bay frozen tundra, like 10 degrees cold. It's like, oh, you want to go outside for a little while? Let's bundle up really, really tight. You got like 30 minutes and it'll get you back inside kind of thing. And then that's only probably for a few months out the year at nighttime. Like, because I went to Vegas in December. I went to Vegas in December. Christmas lights are out. During the daytime, it's 65 degrees with the wind blowing. 70 degrees with the wind blowing. At night, it's the desert. So at night, it gets to your 40s. And it's really, really cold because it's the desert and there's nothing out there. But in the daytime, it's, you know, people walking around in, you know, shorts. I was in shorts. I was in sweatpants and a t-shirt. And like, you know, middle of the daytime in December. So, you know, he doesn't have the problem with his children not being able to play outside. He's with his college quarterback. He's in a warm environment, and he's gotten his money. And the Raiders, at that time, were on the upswing. Then the Raiders fall off the map. Derek Carr is gone. Okay, so now every benefit besides the money and the family lifestyle that he wanted is now gone. It's over with. Okay, so he said, okay, I'm going to stick it out, basically. I like Antonio Pierce. I like Antonio Pierce. I like kind of what they're doing organizationally. I don't like the Derek Carr situation, but I get it. Okay, it is what it is. I'll stick it out. It was a crap show last year for him. towards the end of the year, they kind of figured it out. They had a shot at the playoffs late, but ultimately don't make it. Cool. All right. So, this time you get Antonio Pierce the full off season. You make no move at quarterback, which is frustrating for him. You don't really make a move to help him out at any point. And he's staring at his contract going, the guaranteed money is almost out. We got to figure something out. None of these things were moved on. You enter this season. It starts off speculation when he'd be moved in the offseason. He says, no, I'm not going anywhere. He says, I'm not standing shop. I'm not going anywhere. So on and so forth. Okay, so now he is in the year. The frustration is visible. The only time he was smiling was when they beat the Ravens. Like, Devontae Adams wants to win. His money is there. His lifestyle is there. That's fine. He wants to win games. Or at least be with the quarterback he trusts to get him the ball and not get him killed. Because remember on the receiver show on Netflix, he was like, man, they're going to kill me. Like, they're throwing me these hospital balls, as I call them. I call them hospital balls. They're throwing me these dangerous balls. Like, they're going to kill me. I'm already beat up, and they keep throwing me into these routes. Like, they're going to kill me. And so that's what he's looking at. So Devontae Adams finally said, I'm out. Get me out of here. I want out. And the two teams that shot to the top of the list were the New Orleans Saints and the New York Jets. One has his old college quarterback. One has his longtime pro quarterback. Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, they could use another weapon. Just being honest. Gary Wilson and who? Exactly. It gets very Alan Lazard-y really fast. No disrespect to Alan Lazard, but you're not on that level. It gets real Alan Lazard-y real fast. The New Orleans Saints. Okay, you have Clay Kubiak, who's a very smart offensive coordinator. You have Derek Carr, who's a quarterback he trusts. You have Alvin Kamara. You have a warm environment still in New Orleans. So if you want about the children to play set, you have a warm environment still in New Orleans. And you have a very, very winnable division. And you have a great defense supporting you. The Saints last week didn't allow an offense touchdown against the Falcons. They lost the game, but they have a great defense supporting them. They have a great fan base. They, like I said, they're still in a warm environment. You have a quarterback you're familiar with. And like I talked about the Jets, that once you get past the number one receiver, like once you get past Chris Olave, ironically from the same school as Gary Wilson, Ohio State, it gets very Rashid Shaheed-y. No disrespect to Rashid Shaheed, but you're not Devontae Adams, you're not Chris Olave, and you're not Gary Wilson, you're very Alan Lazard-y. Like, it is what it is, right? So, let's just say, I won't go that far, but he wants out. He's asking out. Devontae Adams, in a situation, if he goes to the Jets, let's just say, because the price has been reportedly a second round pick plus more. So I think a second and a fifth, you probably get Devontae Adams. Or a second and a fifth, maybe a wide receiver four, you get Devontae Adams. Let's just say you do, if you're the Jets, you make the move, you get Devontae Adams. You drop Devontae Adams into New York City. He's back with Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback that he said he was openly about, I'd love to get back to Aaron. I would be open to playing with Aaron again. He said it. He gets back to Aaron. Now, on one side of the field is Devontae Adams. On the other side of the field is Gary Wilson. If I'm a defensive coordinator, I don't know who do I roll to. Do I put the number one corner on Devontae and roll to Gary Wilson? It's probably the answer. But in that case, now it's one-on-one with Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers. That killed people for years. It didn't matter who the corner was. And if you're the Jets, now it backs people off. You can run the ball more. You see what I'm saying? You can't hurry up and just say, okay, I'm going to send hell at everybody. Rodgers gets the blitz with Devontae Adams and Gary Wilson. Yeah, good luck. So that's a situation that could open up your offense a little bit more. Give Nathaniel Hackett. Jesus, Nathaniel Hackett. Give him a little bit, some more options in the passing game. Also, that play action now, you got to make choices because now with Breece Hall coming, if he's got space to operate, now Breece Hall is now, instead of seeing a 7-man box, he might see a 6-man box at times, spaced out boxes, because you have to close off these passing lanes for Devontae and Gary Wilson. So definitely a move there that could be made. If you're the New Orleans Saints, this is a big move for you as well. So we spoke about how, we talked about earlier, the Saints scoring 45 points a game. That has come down. Derek Carr has come a little bit down to earth. They put up, I think, 10 against the Eagles, and then they gave you 23, I think, against the Falcons or something like that, 24 against the Falcons. You went from 45 a night to 17 a night. That's a 4-touchdown difference. So clearly something has changed here. They're figuring some stuff out. Okay, Devontae Adams is your other receiver. It's Devontae on one side. It's Gary Wilson on the other. It's, of course, Olave, I'm sorry, on the other side. Raheed Shaheed is now your third receiver. Alvin Kamara still in the backfield. Taysom Hill is your utility guy. Okay, now you've got real offensive personnel here. And you're also, like I said, you're also dealing with the fact that you have a good defense in New Orleans as well, that they will be able to support you at any and all times. So that may be a situation that if I'm Devontae Adams, I may be looking at New Orleans. I have a warm environment still. I have a smart offensive coordinator in Clint Kubiak. I have a quarterback I love in Derek Carr. I have a legit option guy across from me in Chris Olave. I have a damn good running back in the backfield in Alvin Kamara. And on top of that, I have a system to where it's offense for dummies. I know for a fact I'm going to get 12 targets. 9 of them are going to be catches. If I'm feeling good, 11 catches. But I'm going to get anywhere from 10 to 13 targets. I'm going to have anywhere from 7 to 11 catches, anywhere from 75 to 110 yards and a touchdown. Like, that's, I know that's my night. And I know we're going to be in this game in the fourth quarter with 3 minutes left, either having the ball up or having the ball closely down. And that's all I can ask for. And I'm going to win my division to play a playoff game. Like, that's what's in front of him. And if I'm Devontae Adams going to New Orleans, I don't see many other situations being beneficial. There's no way on God Green Earth he's the Chief. I'm the Raiders. I'm not going to send him to the Chiefs. He can torch me twice a year, Patrick Mahomes. I'm good, right? He's not going to the Chiefs. He's not going to the Chargers. Now you're going to torch me with Justin Herbert? Now I'm all right. Baltimore, maybe. Is he going to be willing to block 35 times a game? That's a different conversation. Plus, that puts you back in the cold weather, and that puts you in a scenario where you're not the focal point. The focal point's the quarterback. The second focal point's the running back. Is that a situation for you? The Bills, that's really, really cold weather, but that's an environment where you have a quarterback in Josh Allen who would love you. The problem is they don't have the money to pay you. And so, as I said, New Orleans is looking like the spot here to kind of check off as many boxes as possible for Devontae Adams. Speaking of those Jets, I'm going to hit them quickly because we talk about the Jets a lot here. Aaron Rodgers and Robert Saleh, it's clear that there's a power struggle. Saleh, obviously, is his fourth year as the coach there. I thought it would get better. It hasn't. Now you get Rodgers in there who... He's willing to capitulate and to not bend the knee, but step aside for Robert Saleh when he's injured and can't play. But now that Rodgers is there, he's the quarterback, he's healthy, it's his show, especially on offense. It's going to be hard for him now to even consider stepping aside as far as authority and figure and power. Darn sure going to be hard for him to bend the knee. It's going to be hard for him to bend the knee. And he's battling with Saleh. Saleh would say one thing. Rodgers say something. And Saleh starts walking back whatever comment he said to kind of match what Rodgers is saying. It's a mess in New York. Not surprising. It's New York. But it's an absolute mess there right now. What's going on? They're not winning games. They just lost to a quarterback who at halftime had negative passing yards. Like, that's a problem. And what makes it more of a problem is Saleh's defense. You know what I'm saying? Saleh's defense is holding up. It's the offense led by Hackett and Rodgers. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's a problem in the building. And it's just, it's a lot going on in New York. And it was why I would say Devontae Adams might not want to take his talent to East Rutherford, New Jersey at one Jets place. It may not be the best scenario. You know, you still have the Hassan Reddick situation that he's at this point punting his season in an effort to get his money. He's got a year contract, but at some point, I think he has to play so many games for it to vest. To have a vested, he has to be on the roster so many games for it to even count towards free agency. Otherwise, he just does this whole dance with New York again next season. You still got that in the building in New York. Like, it's a lot of issues going on in New York. So, maybe not the best place for Devontae Adams to land. Rashee Rice of the Kansas City Chiefs. They have not given us an update, which could be a good thing. Could be a bad thing. For one, people were saying that it's a positive because if it was an ACL, that'd be known early. Like, they would be already discussing his ACL injury, and that would be that, right? Like, it would be an ACL injury would be known, and it wouldn't even be a lot of discussion about it. It would just be an ACL injury is known. And so he'd be out for the season already. But the fact that they haven't ruled him out could be mean. It could still be an ACL, but it could be some other things, trying to get as much imaging as possible to try and get a full and complete picture regarding Rashee Rice's injury. And then some quick hitter news before we jump into the games of this week. DeMarcus Lawrence has been officially placed on injured reserve. He is out for at least 4 games. The old man just won't quit. Jason Peters is back. He signed to the Seattle Seahawks practice squad. He is trying to play in his 21st NFL season at age 42 at tackle. David Andrews of the New England Patriots will undergo season-ending shoulder surgery. Brutal for the Patriots. Brutal for my Patriots locker room and the offensive line that hasn't been great to begin with. It's going to get a lot worse. And Brandon Cooks has suffered a right knee infection following an operation he had in New York after the win against the Giants. He is out for this week with the potential that he misses several weeks in the not-so-distant future. All right, but let's jump into these games. Let's go. All right, so Thursday night preview, Bucks at Atlanta. I won't spend a ton on any of these games. We'll discuss some of these games a little bit further in Jack's Pack. And actually, I'm skimming my notes. None of these games are in Jack's Pack. So I take back everything I just said. We're going to spend a couple minutes. We're going to spend about 90 seconds on each of these games, kind of give you how I'm feeling about the side and what this game looks like. All right, so again, back to Thursday night preview. We're going to have Bucks at Atlanta. In this game, I am taking the Atlanta Falcons. When there's a Thursday night game, I tend to lean towards the home team, unless the home team is just way worse than the road team. Like, when it was Jets-Patriots, the Jets were the better team. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, unless the road team is just considerably better, I will always lean on short rest games to the home team. Now, Atlanta didn't have the world's best game. The Bucks were rolling, but the teams are close. I think you look at quarterback Cousins and Mayfield, the way they're playing this year. If you want to lean Baker Mayfield, I wouldn't be upset. But to me, they're pretty close. The head coaching battle is pretty close. You look at skill positions: Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts. That's pretty close. You look at the defensive personnel. Like, you know what I'm saying? So these are two close teams. These are two very similar ownership styles. These are two very similar head coaches in terms of their ability and their level on the head coaching ranks. So because of the short rest and the home field, I'm leaning Atlanta in this game, although I do expect it to be a pretty good game. Jets versus Vikings. It's in London. The London games are always weird. If this was a game in Minnesota, I would have hammered the Vikings here. But because the game's in London, the London games are always weird. They're never normal. Like, stuff we've never seen tends to happen in the London games. In the international series in general, it's a different time zone. It's a weird start time for your body. It'd be 8:30 local time. It'd be 8:30 like American time. You know, it's a weird start time for your body. It's weird shadows in Wembley. Like, it's just weird. It's not normal football. It's not a normal football environment. So I kind of always give credence to the London game as being a weird one. Although I do expect the Vikings to be the team that wins. Because what is one thing people always say travels? Defense. And the Vikings have one of the hottest, most creative defenses in the league right now. Like I said, led by Brian Flores and what he's doing schematically. It always travels. I'm going to lean Vikings here to take this W. I think it'll be closer in the fourth quarter and then kind of space out the end. I think the Vikings may do a dagger drive with 4 minutes left kind of thing. But I do expect this game to be a good game in London. Ravens at Bengals. This is a game of desperation for the Bengals. But it's also a game of opportunity. So remember we spoke about this division? And I said Pittsburgh's 3-0, but who cares about Pittsburgh, right? Like, we know they're a 9-win team at best. Even with a 3-0 start, they're a 9-win team. So I kept saying, I'm like, if Cleveland gets their act together, or Cincinnati strings 3 or 4 games together, you could be technically 1 game behind or so in the division, but be in the driver's seat, in the catbird seat, for that Shannon Sharp would say, into being the division winner and winning this division. Cincinnati has that opportunity this week. Because I'm not sure who Pittsburgh plays. Oh, no. Pittsburgh plays the Cowboys. And we'll talk about that game. That game's in Jack's Pack. Pittsburgh plays the Cowboys. So the Cowboys beats Pittsburgh. Now the Pittsburgh Steelers are 3-2. The Bengals turn around and beat the Ravens. Now they're both 2-3. And you're only 1 game behind the team with Justin Fields at quarterback. In your division, and the whole season's in front of you. And as awful as you started, as rough as it was early, me calling for Zach Taylor's job, all of it, you currently are up on the Ravens because you're on the tiebreaker, and the only team in front of you is Justin Fields and the Pittsburgh Steelers, and all is right in the world. Everything's in front of you with 12 games left. I mean, that is what the Bengals are facing. That's what the Bengals have to work for. If you're the Ravens, this is even more of a critical game. Because you could be 3-2 with Pittsburgh playing the Cowboys and be tied for first after an 0-2 start and due to common opponents actually technically be in first place. This is huge. This is the biggest game standing-wise in the NFL this week because it directly affects an entire division. Cleveland's a joke. So it directly affects the entire division. You could either be Cincinnati, 1 game behind Pittsburgh going, what's up? Or Ravens tied with Pittsburgh after this week. Huge game. This game, there's more desperation into me on the Bengals side, and it's in Cincinnati. I've got the Bengals. Bills at Texans. This is a game of elites. So when I talk about those games, you're trying to figure out a way to be. I think this is a game, this could be a playoff preview level game. The Texans are going to win the AFC South. The Jaguars haven't won a football game. The Colts have Anthony Richardson at quarterback. And who else in the AFC South? Colts, Jags. Oh, Titans. Have Will Levis. All right, so I think the Texans are going to win a ring high with this division. The Bills get a lot of breaks in their division as well. The Jets are the Jets. The Patriots are bad. The Dolphins don't have Tua. And without Tua, Mike McDaniels has won 1 game as head coach. So the Bills, these are 2 teams that are going to run away and hide with their divisions, probably clinch their divisions by week 13 or 14. You know, so I mean, unless the Jets make it interesting. But by week 13, 14, no later than week 15, both of these teams should have their division spots locked up. And at that point, they'll be fighting for seeding. So this is a big game, relevant seeding. This could be a second round playoff game, in which case one of them has to go to the other. So this is a huge game. Like I said, Bills at Texans, 2 teams. Texans, you kind of got smacked a little bit, but then you bounce back. Bills, you just rolled. So now you're looking at 2 teams that are dealing with pressure. It's going to be a pressure game on both sides. You got 2 MVP candidate quarterback. And you say, we just saw what the Bills did. What Josh Allen did was spectacular. I said, you got 2 MVP level quarterbacks. I said, you know, and they're coming off inverse situations. Bill get throttled by the Texans get throttled by the Vikings, and then they come out and win last week. The offense looks pretty good. The Bills puts up what Josh Allen probably defaults himself into the MVP conversation against the Jaguars, and then they get throttled by the Ravens. So you look at that team's kind of both in the last 2 weeks, don't know how to feel about themselves, and now they're going to square off in Houston. I'm going to take the Texans here close. I think it's going to be a Stephon Diggs game. I think Diggs is waiting for this game. I think this is going to be the Stephon Diggs game. You traded me. Look what you got now, and he goes off that has a big game. So this is the week I think it's going to be great for Stephon Diggs. But the Texans win. And then Monday Night Football, Saints at Chiefs. I think the Saints win this game. And it's one of those situations where the Saints have a good defense, then so do the Chiefs. The Chiefs are beat to hell. The Saints are not offensively. A little trouble with O-line. Chris Jones could wreck this game for the Saints. But ultimately, I think that the Saints win it close. I think Derek Carr puts a drive together when he has to. And then Mahomes looks around, there's nobody left to throw the ball to. And I think the Saints do win this game close in Arrowhead for a huge win for the New Orleans Saints. But up next, we're going to shift into our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Welcome back into the show, and apparently I have no idea how long these blocks are going to go, because I thought the A block was going to be like a 10-15 minute block, ends up being a 23 minute block. I thought the B block was going to be like a 15 minute block, ends up being a 26 minute block-ish, 25 minute block. All right, I promise Jack Pack won't be that long. And I'm a little frustrated on Jack's Pack. I should have been 4-1 last week. I ended up 3-2. I had Saints minus 1.5, and I thought all week I had them at minus 2.5 or plus 1.5. And I thought all week I had them at plus 2.5. And I would have hit it if it was plus 2.5, but it was plus 1.5, so I lost about half a point. That's frustrating. Or had they played defense and kept them out of field goal range, I still win that bet. But whatever. I went 3-2 last week, improves us to 12-8, which is 60%. And again, the goal of the year is 57%, because 57% means I can be a professional gambler. That is a professional gambler standard. Is anywhere from 54 to 57%. 57% covers your juices, so it doesn't matter what the juices are on your loss bets. You win if you bet the same unit on all your bets. 54%, you may end up being a positive winner, but a negative net money because of juice. So if you just bet all the same units, I am currently at 60%, and we're going to continue to roll this week. I love most of these numbers, like a couple of them, but I love most of them. The first number I love is Jags minus 3 versus the Colts. Anthony Richardson's a little beat up. Joe Flacco came in and played well, but remember that desperation I spoke about with the Bengals? The Jaguars are actually ultimately desperate. The Jags lose this game, fall to 0-5, the season's over, and it's over. And you're just getting Trevor Lawrence questions, you're getting Doug Peterson questions. Doug Peterson may end up being fired. It's one of those situations where they have to win against the Colts. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And the ironic part is, if the Texans lose, you're only 2 games back in your division. You're 1-4, but you're 2 games back with a chance to play the Texans again. So this is a situation where the Jaguars have to win. I do think they win by more than a touchdown. Therefore, they definitely cover the minus 3. Take the Jags. Commanders minus 3 versus the Browns. Hammer the Commanders here. So remember I talked about how I was going to be on the bus for Jaden Daniels. You're probably going to end up driving the bus. I'm officially in the driver's seat. Commanders to the moon. They're going to destroy the Browns. And what you don't want is a Dan Quinn team with confidence. That's a bad combination. Remember that Atlanta roster that went to the Super Bowl and was up 23 on Brady? Name me some players off that roster. Don't worry, I'll wait. It wasn't a very amazingly talented roster. They just had a lot of belief in themselves, and they believed in the scheme, and Dan Quinn's a hell of a schematic person on defense. So now you've got a team that's playing a Browns team that is all but setting up to trade Amari Cooper. You have a Browns team that has Deshaun Watson, who is whatever left of him in Deshaun Watson. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just whatever is left of him, I guess, is what they have in Cleveland. No David Njoku still. Your offensive line's a little beat up. And like I said, you've got a Dan Quinn team who's excited to be there. And on the other side, Cleveland have a great defense. Guess who's coming into town? Cliff Kingsbury and the most efficient quarterback in the first four games of any season in NFL history. Yeah, I got the Commanders here. Yeah, by a couple of touchdowns, probably. If this is one of those big numbers, I would have went with the big number anyway. But -3, stealing. Take the Commanders. Cowboys, +2.5 at Pittsburgh. I don't understand the line. If it was -2.5, I'd probably stay away. +2.5? Easily take the Cowboys here. This is such a number. This is such a gimme number. You could tease this number. You could tease this number probably to almost even money, and you'd still get positive money. Like, I don't understand this line at all from Vegas. Not even a little bit. Take the Cowboys here, +2.5 at the Pittsburgh Steelers. So those were our three love money numbers. These are my likes. I don't hate them. I just like them. So Patriots -1 versus the Miami Dolphins. Take the Patriots. I don't trust either of these teams. I think the Patriots currently has a better infrastructure than the Dolphins. It's a home game for the Patriots. Snoop Huntley's probably the opposing starting quarterback. I've got to believe that the New England Patriots can stop Snoop Huntley more than the Miami Dolphins can stop Jacoby Brissett in the run game with Ramondre Stevenson. I've just got to believe that Patriots win this game all right. They win about more than a point. Take the Patriots. And then a number that I battled on a little bit. I like it. Don't love it. Raiders +2.5 at the Broncos. And the only reason why, because it's a Broncos home game. You get into that mile high air. Sean Payton slows the game down, tires your defense out. And all of a sudden, you're looking at the fact that you're down 7 somehow. And you really don't know how you got there. But I would take the Raiders here +2.5. I just have a little bit more belief in the Raiders right now and what they're doing, juxtaposed to what the Broncos are doing, even with how well Bo Nix didn't play against the New York Jets. So I have the Raiders here. Now, they're dealing with stuff with Devontae Adams, but it's always weird with the Raiders. It feels like the more turmoil they have, the more drama they have, they play better and they win games. I don't get it. Well, they've got Devontae Adams drama right now. They've got a mess right now with him. I don't expect him to play this week. I don't expect him to ever put on the silver and black again. But I do think, despite all that, that the Raiders win this game outright, but definitely cover the +2.5. So again, run through the numbers one more time. Jags -3 over the Colts. Commanders -3 over the Browns. Cowboys +2.5 over Pittsburgh. Patriots -1 over the Dolphins. Raiders +2.5 over the Broncos. But up next, we're going to shift into the WNBA and talk about what's going down there. Welcome back into the show. After about an hour of NFL talk, we're going to move on to the WNBA as they are roaring towards the conclusion of their season, sadly. The WNBA always feels is way too short. We need more teams. I'm so excited for the expansion teams, with the Golden State Valkyrie and the Portland team, and then, I forgot the other team already, Toronto. They are coming into WNBA. I'm so excited. And then we need, I think, either a Houston team. That'll be fun. Because remember at the Comets. I wouldn't mind a team in Miami. That'll be cool. But I like how they're spreading out their footprint through the country. But anyway, to the teams that exist, to the teams that are current, we're in the Final Four. We have the Minnesota Lynx battling the Connecticut Sun, and then the New York Liberty battling Las Vegas Aces in a series that many people wanted to be the WNBA Finals, Liberty and Aces. We just got it early. Which under the old system, these are two teams from East Side, it would have been Lynx, Aces, Sun, Liberty under the East West old configuration. But because they unconferenced the playoffs, you get East versus the West in both series. Minnesota, you start off with Minnesota and Connecticut, they're gonna go to Connecticut with it being a 1-1 series. The Sun stole home court in game one. Minnesota came out and handled business game two. But it felt like, and you see it a lot in the NBA, it felt like one of those games where Connecticut came out with the mindset of, we got to steal. And once they stole, I won't say they backed off. I won't dare accuse the Connecticut Sun of that, because they have championship-level players. They have championship-level team. But I think a certain level of comfortability kicked in. I think a certain level of what's what I'm looking for? Comfort. I think this would be the word I'm looking for. But a certain level of, not complacency, complacency kicked in. Or resolve. So, like, once Minnesota gets out and they start rolling, because the first half was fairly close. Once they get out rolling in the third quarter, early fourth quarter, you make that push, and then you go, all right, we did what we came here to do. We split. Let's go back to Connecticut and take care of business. And so I think that's what happened there. I had the Minnesota Lynx before this series making it to the finals. I still have the Minnesota Lynx after this series making it to the finals. And the Feast of Collier is just too good. And so when you have a balanced series like this is, the best player by a lot usually makes the difference. The Feast of Collier is the best player in this series by a lot. I think the second best player in this series is probably Alyssa Thomas. She's not on the Feast of Collier's level, right? And again, Connecticut has a bunch of dogs on it. Alyssa Thomas, DeJuana Bonner, DeJuanae Carrington, just to name a few. Marina Mabry. Nafisa Collier is the best player in this series by a lot. And so I think that being the case, I think that it's going to be hard for Connecticut to win this series because the teams are fairly balanced out. I think Cheryl Reeves the better coach. Evidence, she won coach of the year. I think she's the better coach. And I just think that Nafisa is just going to ultimately dominate this series. They won game two with her playing not great. So she goes into Connecticut. She was going crazy in round one. She goes to Connecticut. I think they steal home court back. I think it goes back to Minnesota 2-2. And then it's a game five in Minnesota. Nafisa Collier is one game away from the WNBA Finals. It's going to be hard to deny her. Just gonna be honest here. So I think she's just the best player in this series. Flipping to the other series, a series that many people wanted it to be the WNBA Finals, myself included, Liberty and Aces. You've got a series where currently it's 2-0. It's 2-0 Liberty. What's the old NBA adage? A series doesn't start until the home team loses. So technically, this series hasn't started yet. Liberty take care of business. I think if the Aces were gonna steal, it was last night. And if you're an Aces fan, I'm an Aces supporter. I like Asia Wilson. I like the Aces. That last night hurt because you went down. You were down all game. You charge it to take the lead, and then Asia Wilson. She misses a bunny. She misses a layup. And then Liberty get up 2-3 possessions, and then you play the free throw game, and the Liberty don't miss. And then ultimately, you end up with a situation where you could, they do miss a free throw, and again, you miss an easy one. Kelsey Plum, like, doesn't catch the ball from Chelsea Gray. For some reason, you don't call a timeout there. And you said Kelsey, it bounced off her shoulder, and then you're in the free throw game again, and you lose. And it's just a situation where that was your game to steal. That was your game to get it back to Vegas. And you're in the whole plane ride home, you're saying the next time we get on a plane, it's in the WNBA Finals. And instead, you know for a fact, in order to win this series, we have to go back to New York. And so it's a mindset of it's desperation in Vegas. Vegas has chance to be the first team since the Comets to win three championships in a row. Joining the Comets is the only team in WNBA history to win three titles in a row, joining a very short list of American professional sports teams to win three in a row. It's never been done in the NFL. The Chiefs are trying this year. It's only been done once in the WNBA. Comets did it. The first three titles all went to them. You're looking at the NBA. You've got Russell Celtics, Jordan's Bulls. That's it. Like Russell says, did it a few times. Jordan's Bulls did it twice. No one since Shaq and Kobe's Lakers. That's it. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're looking at maybe three-peat champions in the NBA. No one did it in the 80s. Bulls did it in the 90s. Shaq and Kobe did it in the 2000s. No one's done it since. Yeah, so you're looking at three or four in the NBA. I'm not as versed on hockey history, but I think it's been done one time in the NHL and twice in baseball. So you're looking at less than 10 teams in the history of American professional sports to ever win three in a row, and that's what the Aces are trying to join. And now all the pressure in the world's on you because you can't lose another game. The next time the Aces can afford to lose another game is in the WNBA Finals. Otherwise, they don't make it. And if you're the Liberty, you're saying, we just got to win one of these next two. If the Aces come out and it's just the Aza Wilson show, and you look up and you're down 15 to 20 points at halftime, all right, take this and we'll go to game four. For the Aces, you have to be incredibly desperate here for the rest of this series. And I do, honestly, I'm not abandoning ship. My head is saying Liberty, but I've been with the Aces all season. I've been supporting them on a three-peat rule. I think they're going to ultimately get this done. This is an amazing rivalry, though. Aces and Liberty, Brianna Stewart, Aza Wilson. Because last year, Brianna Stewart wins the MVP, Aza wins the title. This year, over Brianna Stewart. This year, Aza has the MVP. It's looking like Brianna's going to keep Aza off the title. So this is going to be an amazing rivalry, hopefully, for years to come. But like I said, I'm not abandoning the Aces. I do think they get it done. Hey, you want to win three straight titles? You got to win three straight games. That's about as plain and simple, straight to the point, as it can be done. If you are, like I say, if you're the Aces, Aza Wilson's the best player in the world. She's got to win this game. But, on other news, expansion news. We started with expansion. We're going to end with expansion. The WNBA announced some key information for the expansion draft for the Golden State Valkyries. It will be take place on December 6th on ESPN. They will begin playing 2025, so next season. Golden State, I'm going to read the key information. Golden State will select from a designated pool of available players as determined by each of the current 12 teams. Each of the existing teams will be required to submit to the league office a roster list that includes every player to whom the player has rights. So this is including, we don't have rookie draft rights, but this is including hold rights, is including draft and sash people. Like every player that you have rights to, you have to submit to the league, every single person that it is. The deadline for submission of the roster list will be determined at a later date, but it will be expected to be approximately 10 days prior to the day of the draft. So end of November, for instance. Each team's submitted roster list will be required to designate a max of 6 quote-unquote protected players who will not be available for the selection in the expansion draft. All of the players on each team's rosters will be available for the Valkyries to pick from, basically. And so that is huge. And then, of course, I wonder how many players they have to pick. They haven't released all the details. Like, do I have to pick all vets? Can I pick, you know, 5 vets, 7 unsigned rookies? Can I pick, 6 and then have 6 draft picks? Like, I wonder how they're going to have them build their roster. Are they going to make them do 12 people within your draft? You know, 3 and then so on and so forth. So it'll be very interesting to see how this draft goes, because it'll set the precedent for Portland, Toronto, and the 16th franchise whenever that gets approved, probably for the year 2027. All right, but up next, we're going to have our Jack's Hot Take, which will be our college football 2-minute drill. Welcome back into the show. And now we are going to run our college football two-minute drill. And we'll discuss as many topics in the college football world as in-depthly as possible in 2 minutes. Your timer, or the timer, starts now. All right, so we are into the era of the NIL transfer. As they talked about, the quarterback at UNLV, Sluka, what are they through? He decided to take his red shirt and transfer immediately or enter the transfer portal due to the fact of the NIL obligations were not met at the time, or he felt like were not going to be met through UNLV. Now, multiple reports are crisscrossing all over the place. Some were saying that they agreed on basically $50,000 up front, $50,000 by week three. The school was trying to do like installments, whatever. I don't know what happened. Regardless, he wanted out. They ended up winning their game without him, with one of the fans in the crowd having a sign that read, "This is UNLV, not UNILV." Clever. But all in all, I think we're going to see this more and more. It actually started a trend where a couple other players dropped out due to that, or redshirted due to that as well. The Pac-12 and the Mountain West are still in an ongoing battle to become the fifth of the Power Fives and to hold themselves. The Pac-12 has picked up schools like Gonzaga, along with a couple other schools. The Mountain West is pulling people up as well. Sacramento State is doing their absolute best to get to the Pac-12 as soon as possible, but they are in a battle for that as well. Alabama and Georgia was an exciting game that had many different twists and turns, especially towards the end. You had Bama going up 30-7, and then you finish with a Georgia absolute run to take the lead, and then Ryan Williams at 17 years old does one of the craziest moves in the history of college football with the dead leg spin between two Georgia's players, causing them to hug each other as he runs into the end zone. Ashton Jeanty is everybody's favorite player at Boise State. On the blue grass, he's averaging 10 yards a carry, 83 carries, over 800 yards, 13 touchdowns through four games. He has a chance to win the Heisman, and if the Heisman Trophy is not Travis Hunter, change the name of the award. Whew. And we get it in just under 2 minutes. And the two-minute drill is probably going to do our college football update. If college football is not a big topic this week, we'll do our college football two-minute drill to make sure you always have the most updates on college football. But that is all I have for today. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow and turn on the post notifications for the Just in Time Sports social media so you always stay up to date as humanly possible. But this is your host, Justin, signing out.